Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Turnout for the 2014 midterm elections was abysmal. National turnout was just 36%. It was the worst voter turnout in 72 years. In the three largest states, California, New York, and Texas, less than a third of the population voted. Voting rights groups say restrictive laws are causing confusion and putting up barriers to the registration process. According to the Brennan Center for Justice, since the beginning of this year, 40 bills restricting access to registration and voting were introduced or carried over in 17 states. The Brennan Center says increased single-party control in state capitals has accompanied a renewed push for voting restrictions, like voter ID laws, for example. At the same time, there's continued momentum around reforms to improve access to the polls. Oregon recently became the first state in the country to automatically register voters who go to the DMV to obtain or renew a driver's license or state ID. California is considering a similar law. So what are other states doing to make voting easier? Today we're joined by Dr. Mindy Romero. She directs the California Civic Engagement Project at the Center for Regional Change at UC Davis. A recent analysis by the center found that only 8% of eligible young voters in the state of California cast a ballot last November. Hi, Mindy. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Good to be here.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Kim Alexander, president and founder of the California Voter Foundation, a nonpartisan organization that works to improve the election process so that it better serves voters. Hi, Kim. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. And Dr. Jim Moore is a political scientist who specializes in election analysis. He directs the Tom McCall Center for Policy Innovation at Pacific University in Oregon. Hi, Jim. Thank you for joining us. Hi, Jim. Do we have you? All right. Well, we'll try to connect with Jim. First off, so let's start off by talking about the bad news. We saw horrible turnout in 2014. National turnout was 36%, and in California, it was 42%. It was the worst voter turnout in 72 years. And a number of voting rights groups have talked about why this has happened, although I wish it would get more media attention. And they're pointing to a number of things. Restrictive laws, felons still cannot vote. People were apathetic. People are outraged about money in politics, the two-party system. Mindy, how do you explain such low voter turnout?
Sure. And if I may, I'll just start off by saying in California, just so we're comparing apples to apples, the eligible turnout rate in the last election in November was actually only 31%. 42% was the registered turnout rate. And nationally, the 36 also was a eligible turnout rate. So we're below the national rate when it comes to turnout of those that are eligible in our state. So it's even more abysmal, if you will. And so I think you were asking, how can we explain that?
Right.
Right? Yeah. Well, there's lots of factors that have led to the state that we're at, many of them ongoing and some new. So in terms of ongoing, we do have voter apathy, certainly, in our state, but we like not to call it voter apathy, but rather what's really happening is voters are feeling disconnected. It's not that voters don't care or they can't give the time of day to voting, but rather many are telling us, and we believe these numbers are on the rise, more and more folks are feeling disconnected. They don't feel that the political process, particularly the act of voting itself, is relevant to their lives, that if they take the time out of their busy schedules, get home from work, go back out to the polls, that casting that ballot is connected to something that's actually going to benefit their lives. So people are feeling disconnected from the political process. And also, particularly this last election, we had some contextual factors. So we had a governor race for governor that wasn't very It wasn't contested by all accounts, and in the end wasn't in terms of the data itself. Many people even reported that they didn't know there was an election happening at all. And so when we have so midterm elections always have lower turnout than presidential years. But when you have the top of the ticket that isn't competitive, you've got a situation where you have less information going around. You have less media attention. You'll have less money in the race, and money for all the bad that it can cause, it also does generate more media and information and talking and so forth, news stories and everything. So we had a race that wasn't very competitive, and a lot of people didn't get that news feed around that. We didn't have a Senate race. We did in the last midterm. Yeah, and we didn't, sorry, in the last midterm election. And then I think there's, you know, there's ongoing institutional barriers, certainly, that we can, I'm sure, I think we're going to talk about today, I would imagine.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, so and in short, you know, issues around access to registration and so forth. And then we have things that are ongoing. So not only increasing apathy or disconnection, but we have other factors such as a declining party affiliation. More and more folks in nationally, but definitely in California, are registering the old declined estate, or we call it no party preference today, and that has impact. So we have different demographic situations in the state. As our demographics change dramatically, that impacts our turnout rates, and I'm happy to talk about that in more depth. So there's lots of factors that are going on. It isn't a question as to why, but rather how can we address these issues to really make significant change? And we need to do so if we want to avoid having another low turnout story in our next election.
Right. And so, Kim, what would you add to that? I mean, I heard people talk about the fact that there were so many state and local propositions and they couldn't keep up with them. But the one theme I heard, and this is from friends who vote regularly, who basically said, I'm tired of the negative ads. I feel like these politicians are bought and sold, and I'm just tired of it. I mean, what are you hearing from people?
Well, that is a message a lot of people have about elections in general. And, you know, it's you can't avoid the fact that there is this well-deserved perception that politics is controlled by special interests. And people get that. You know, people see how much money is being contributed. They see what that money buys in terms of these negative ads, and they think that there's no place for me in this equation. And so I think that a lot of people are really turned off by that. They think that their vote doesn't count. And, you know, it's hard to argue with that because we do know how much power special interests have in politics. And I think it's naive to think that that view isn't legitimate. So the challenge is to help people understand how even despite those odds, they can still have a voice in the political process. And as Mindy was saying, connect with the voting process. And I think that's really where we've got a big gap. People just don't understand how voting impacts their lives on a day-by-day basis. They don't understand, you know, the contests that are on the ballot. They're not given enough information. We have, you know, people think, oh, it only takes 10 minutes to vote, but it takes hours to prepare to vote and to go through all the choices on your ballot. And let's face it, people don't like to do things they feel they're not good at. And I think a lot of people look at the voter guides that we get them that we think are so, they think they're so helpful. We think they're helpful. But I think to a lot of people, it can be intimidating and overwhelming when they get their state voter information guide. They see all these complicated propositions. They see all these judges on the ballot
right,
that are running that they have no idea who they are or where to find information about them. And so, you know, I think that's really the challenge for those of us in the voter education and civic engagement space is to improve the voting information that we're giving to people. We give people a lot, but I think we're not doing it in formats that are the most user-friendly. I mean, I think that voting in some ways is becoming this antiquated process like writing thank you notes in part because it's the process of deciding how to vote doesn't mirror other important processes that we engage in when we're making important decisions in our lives, like where do you want to live or what kind of job do you want to have or where do you hope your kids will go to school. You know, we all turn to the internet for that, and we expect to find information right at our fingertips to be able to make informed choices. And for voting, it doesn't work that way. There are a lot of great nonpartisan voter information resources like Voters Edge, created by MapLight and the League of Women Voters. But when it comes to the official information from government agencies, we have no statewide voting information lookup tool for voters. We have no statewide voter registration status lookup tool for voters. We don't provide a statewide tool to let people check the ballot, their vote by mail ballot status. So these are all technologies that are at the door. We're waiting to implement them. And we will be under our new Secretary of State. So we're excited about that. We see some good changes coming for voters in California.
Well, that's good to hear, because we do debates on the propositions and spend hours finding the information. And in many cases, a lot of people say, well, what I usually do is I look at who's funding the propositions and then I make my decision. So,
and that's perfectly fine, too. You know, that's a great shortcut and something that the California Voter Foundation has been promoting. And I'm happy to say in the next election, the Secretary of State is going to total up how much is raised on every proposition for and against and publish that information online so people can quickly find out how much is being raised. FPPC is already compiling top 10 donors for and against every measure on the ballot. That was from a bill that we supported. So we're beginning to see these information resources become available to voters, and we're going to see more of it in 2016.
And we're
pretty excited about that.
It'll be easy to access because right now Ballotpedia does a really good job of that.
Yeah, there's some great nonprofit sites that are out there. The problem is voters don't always know they exist. They don't know where to go look for them. So we want to see, you know, Rose, I always talk about the four voting information sectors of the voting information pie. And there's the campaigns who ignore a lot of people who don't vote. And then there's the media, which is unfortunately shrinking. And then there, especially with state and local news coverage. And then there's the nonprofit sector, which does as much as it can with limited resources. And then the government sector. And it's the government sector where I think we have the greatest opportunity to improve and expand voting information that will reach everybody, make it available in user-friendly formats, make it so it displays easily on your smartphone. I mean, that's how a lot of young people are getting their information, and we have to meet them where they're at and provide them with, you know, not a printed voter guide that they get in a mail. They don't even check their mailboxes. So we have to provide them the information and the formats that's going to be familiar to them.
Kim Alexander is president and founder of the California Voter Foundation. Today we're talking about voter turnout, efforts to suppress the vote and increase the vote. National turnout in the 2014 midterm elections was just 36%. It was the worst voter turnout in 72 years. We're also joined by Dr. Jim Moore, political scientist who specializes in election analysis. He directs the Tom McCall Center for Policy Innovation at Pacific University in Oregon. Now, Oregon really stands out, Jim, for a number of reasons, but I read that Oregon actually had some of the highest turnout in the nation, almost 70% for the second straight midterm election. Is that right?
Yeah, we actually ended up with 71% of registered
71.
Voters. Yeah, but that's of registered voters. So okay. We're talking about voting age population, and we actually have one of the lower voting registration rates in the country. We're kind of in the 85% range, and most other states are kind of 90 to 95. So we ended up with about a kind of 55 to 60% voting age turnout. But compared to the mid-30s, it was amazing.
Right, almost double.
Yeah.
So why? How did you do it?
Well, there's the mechanisms, which we've been hearing about from the other people. We have vote by mail. So every registered voter gets a ballot in the mail. You get it about 2.5 weeks before the election. And when we hear, you know, the things about it takes hours to fill out the ballot, it's like, fine. So sit at your kitchen table and spend the hours if you want to do it. So that's one thing, the mechanism. But the other thing is we had elections that were grabbing people's attention. We like California, have a lot of ballot measures, and we had a fair amount this time, but they weren't overwhelming. We've had, 25 to 30 in the past and then local things, so it's like San Francisco with all those ballot measures. We didn't have that many this time, and we had a Senate race and a governor's race that were catching people's attention. And the ballot measures also brought in people. We had the GMO measure, which California voted on just a bit ago.
Right, and that went down like it did in California.
Yeah, by just a few hundred votes, though, so that
right.
was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
And so we had things like that that got people out. They were getting people to talk about it when they were in their daily lives, so they wanted to cast their ballots.
And you also had marijuana legalization on the ballot.
Yeah, we certainly did, which ended up being fascinating. Usually with ballot measures, and you see this in California, when you have a measure like that, so some kind of a social issue, it can start out polling really, really well, but all you have to do is raise questions in people's minds. For instance, like the GMO measures that raise questions about GMOs and banning them. And with marijuana, it started out with a 55% lead, and nobody changed their mind over the course of the election, and it won by 55%.
Wow. So again, Oregon had some of the highest turnout in the country in the midterm election, 71% versus national turnout of just 36%. And Jim, vote by mail was implemented in Oregon in 2000. Washington and Colorado have also adopted vote by mail. So after voting, you either send the envelope back or you return it in person. Can you talk about what major changes did you see when this first went into effect in 2000?
Yeah, a little bit of a correction. We've had vote by mail since about 1982 for local elections, but it just went as a requirement for all elections in the year 2000. So people had the option before then. So we've had it for a long time. So here's what happens with vote by mail. You get your ballot, and you either fill it out really quickly. For instance, I try to be the first person in my county to get the ballot back. And okay. But what generally happens is that we built in a culture now where people actually hold on to their ballots. And so more than 50% of the ballots will come in on the Saturday, Monday, and Tuesday before the election day, the last 3 days of the election cycle. And they don't mail it in. If you don't mail it in by Thursday, it's not going to get there. So they're actually taking their mail-in ballots to a drop-off place. And the drop-off place is like a post office box out on the street. You find them at public libraries and places like that all over the state. And so we get the kind of turnout that you see in that last weekend, in effect. Everybody is turning in their ballots. And it's amazing. It means that people are taking the time. They're also waiting to see if any surprises come up or more information comes up in the ballots, measures, and the races they're paying attention to. So they are focusing on the election and the issues and trying to not be surprised and then cast their ballots.
Phil Kiesling, who served as Secretary of State for Oregon in the 90s, said that if all 50 states used mail-in voting, at least 20 million additional votes would be cast. The number could be high as 50 million. And Mindy, Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez of California introduced a bill, AB 1461, that is modeled after... that's for the DMV law. I'm sorry. What is the status of doing something like this in California where it's completely mail-in? And would you agree with something like that?
Well, great question. I think there are, for a number of years, there have been a number of efforts looking at bringing all vote by mail to California. And I think we currently have a bill or two in our legislative sessions that are happening now that are addressing some aspects of this. If we just look at the question of 100%, most of the discussion around that are people that are interested in bringing that to California are rooting that, if you will, their analysis on this idea that it's going to increase turnout, some of the numbers that you just gave. And we don't, the data right now currently don't necessarily tell us that. So we have, we don't have that in California, of course, to look at. And we look at Oregon and Washington as our best examples. And Oregon and Washington, some of the research that we've seen has been a bit mixed in terms of the impact on turnout itself. If you're just looking at turnout, if that's your question, there's been some studies that have shown an impact, some studies that have said, well, really, it's just about better connecting with those folks that are already likely to vote, getting them out to vote, but not necessarily other groups. So it's still a bit of a question in terms of how much it would impact turnout. There are, of course, those folks that say, well, it'll definitely increase convenience for voters. We at the California Civic Engagement Project did do a study recently this last year looking at the November 2012 general election and the use of vote by mail. And that election was the first time in California that 51% of all actual ballots cast were from vote by mail ballots. And what we found was even though so many more Californians are using vote by mail, in this last November election, by the way, it was 60%, we see uneven use. We have different use rates by different groups. So Latinos and young folks are using vote by mail at much lower rates. And so one question, as we have these discussions around vote by mail, is what happens to those groups if we did eliminate or reduce polling places, for instance? What would happen to those groups that haven't been using vote by mail as high as the general population? Would they turn to vote by mail completely, or would we lose some of those voters? And that's an open question in terms of the research right now.
Well, I'd love to hear from listeners on this. If we did require vote by mail in the state of California, do you think voter turnout would increase and would it change your voting patterns? Again, we had a pretty bad turnout in California. Turnout for eligible voters was 31% and registered voters 42%. Across the country, national turnout was just 36%. So what are your thoughts on this? Why are these numbers so low? If you have a personal experience you'd like to share, or if you hear comments from your friends and family about voting, why don't they vote? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. What do you think it would take to get more people to the polls? We will also talk about another law in Oregon, the first one in the country, that would automatically register voters who go to the DMV to renew a driver's license or a state ID. So if you have any questions about voting, we'd love to hear from you or comments. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Mindy Romero directs the California Civic Engagement Project at the Center for Regional Change at UC Davis. Kim Alexander is president and founder of the California Voter Foundation. And Dr. Jim Moore directs the Tom McCall Center for Policy Innovation at Pacific University in Oregon. And let's hear from Frank in San Francisco. Hi, Frank. Welcome to the show.
Excuse the cynicism, but I'd like to ask any of the guests if they have confidence in the honesty of the vote count in states where the Republicans control the Secretary of State office. And I'm referring specifically to the recent midterm elections where you had unpopular incumbent governors in Kansas and Wisconsin, and the final campaign poll showed the election too close to call, and then the final result had the Republican winning with 50% of the vote.
Well, thank you. I'm actually going to pitch another show about electronic voting machines because that conversation kind of died down after President Obama was elected. Who would like to take that question?
This is Kim Alexander. I can chime in on this topic. I don't know the specifics in the states that that Frank was suggesting, but I can tell you that in California, we have worked very hard and very successfully to make sure that our election results are transparent. The California Voter Foundation, along with groups like EFF and Verified Voting, worked very hard in the last decade to get rid of paperless electronic voting machines in California and replace them with primarily optical scan-based voting systems, paper-based systems. And if there are touchscreen systems being used in California, there's a requirement under statute that there be a voter verified paper trail that accompanies every single ballot that's cast electronically. And we have a 1% manual count law in California that requires that 1% of the precincts in every county are selected at random, and the votes in those precincts are retabulated publicly by hand and compared to the computer software vote count. So we do a lot in California to verify the vote. And fortunately, our new Secretary of State, Alex Padilla, is an MIT engineering graduate who's very understanding of these issues and supportive of the continuing need to be able to audit the vote. So I'd say, you know, we're in safe hands in California. Other states, not so much. There are definitely issues in states, I think, at least perception issues and valid ones where you're using paperless electronic voting. And I'd encourage folks who are concerned about this issue to check with verifiedvoting.org, and they've got great nationwide resources on who's using what kind of systems nationwide.
The AP just reported that a Wichita, Kansas State University mathematician, Beth Clarkson, is suing top Kansas election officials seeking paper tapes from electronic voting machines. She analyzed returns in Kansas and elsewhere over several elections, and she says that there's a statistically significant pattern where the percentage of Republican votes increase the larger the size of the precinct. And you can find that story. We'll put a link at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for your question. And I'll ask our other guests if they also want to respond after the break. Today, we're talking about voter turnout. It was abysmal during the midterm elections in 2014. Just 36% nationally. It's the worst voter turnout we've seen in 72 years. So what explains low voter turnout? What would it take to increase it? We'd love to hear from you. There's something kind of strange going on. The Brennan Center says single-party control, Republicans controlling so many state capitals, has resulted in voter ID laws and an end to early voting on Sundays. At the same time, there's momentum around reforms to improve access. So what are your thoughts on this? This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
Your call on local public radio, KALW. If you have a perspective that you haven't heard yet in today's discussion or a question you think needs to be answered, we invite you to join the conversation by calling 866 798 800-998-8255, toll-free, 866-798-TALK. If you'd prefer to write your question and email it to us, the address is feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, we'll have your say from the BBC, and following that at noon, this week's edition of Bina.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing a new report detailing the origins of the so-called Islamic State. We'll also talk about former New York Times reporter Judith Miller, who is out with a new book. So she's being interviewed across the country, and she's claiming that intelligence agencies are to blame for her discredited reporting on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. That is tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about efforts to suppress and increase voter turnout across the country. Midterm elections, national turnout was just 36%. It was the worst voter turnout in 72 years. So what explains this? What are your thoughts on what we're seeing? Voter ID laws are being passed, even though voter fraud doesn't exist. Republicans are also passing bills to end early voting on Sundays. At the same time, Oregon just passed a law, first in the state, that would register voters who go to the DMV to obtain or renew a driver's license or state ID. Today, we're joined by Dr. Mindy Romero. She directs the California Civic Engagement Project at the Center for Regional Change at UC Davis. Kim Alexander is president and founder of the California Voter Foundation. And Dr. Jim Moore directs the Tom McCall Center for Policy Innovation at Pacific University in Oregon. Jim, what are your thoughts on Frank's question? Do you have more concerns in light of what we saw in 2000 and other elections about accurate vote counts?
Yeah, there's a concern, but unless you get somebody like the Wichita mathematician to really look at it, people often have a problem saying the exit polls said one thing, but the results said another. I just have to point out that the exit polls are a sample and the vote is an actual number. And so if they're within some kind of a margin of error, I always go with what the count is. Now, there is a huge problem that you'll talk about in your later show with who owns the software and the machines and all that, and that's a huge issue. But we haven't seen really proof of the systematic changing of votes around the country. But there's a lot of gray areas. Quite frankly, going into Ohio is like going into a swamp trying to understand this. It's just amazing.
Yeah, we did a whole show around that in 2014. Just quickly, with the mail-in ballot, are those ballots counted by the same companies that count votes made on electronic voting machines?
Yeah, everybody in Oregon, when we went to the whole thing, everybody switched over to optical scan stuff. And so it's the optical scan company, same kind of thing happens. We don't have the 1% mandatory check that you heard about in Oregon of hand counting ballots, but every county does something similar with that. And then there's a fun thing if there is a recount. So, for instance, our GMO major in 2014 was recounted. It must be by hand. It cannot go through the machine. It has to be by hand. And so that's also a check on what's going on out there.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Thank you for calling in, Frank. Let's go next to Dorothy in San Francisco. Hi, Dorothy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. I think that the whole system really needs drastic revisions. Some wit once said, if God meant us to vote, he would have given us candidates. The sort of person who is good a candidate is not necessarily good at the job. So we need to attract better candidates for one thing, which I think limiting the time and money involved in campaigns would help a great deal. The whole system needs to be streamlined, which I think would not alienate people quite so much. I think Election Day should be moved from Tuesday to sometime on the weekend. It might make it easier for people. I personally don't think that vote by mail would make much difference because of these systemic problems. I vote, but my main reason for voting is because of the propositions. I'm not real happy with most of the people who run.
Well, I think you're not alone. I mean, what about the guy Doug Hughes, who flew his gyrocopter to the Capitol in D.C. and landed on the grass to raise awareness about money in politics, and it's all connected to these issues. So thank you for that call, Dorothy. I'll get a few more calls, and then we'll get responses. Let's go to Roger in Fremont. Hi, Roger. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I just thought I'd pass on perspective. I've worked the polls in Livermore the last two rounds, and I will be working a runoff election May 19th. I believe it's for the state Senate. There's one item on the ballot, and when we did the first vote, I believe in March, we were taking polls among ourselves to how many voters would come in. We had a grand total of 22 people come in, and maybe 15 absentee ballots being walked in. So I don't know how much easier you can make it for people.
Wow.
When you have, I mean, you know, you can mail it in, you can carry it in, you can walk in. And we saw essentially 40 out of, I would guess, 900 people on our precinct list. So I just tossed that out as a thought.
Well, Roger, those are pathetic numbers. Did you talk to people about why they didn't vote?
No, we didn't see them.
But did you talk to your friends and family about it?
Well, see, I don't actually live in Livermore.
Oh, okay.
I live elsewhere, so I came in. But it's just, I mean, our first voter got in about 8 o'clock. The next one was like 45 minutes later.
Wow.
Our rush was maybe 3 people, if that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I still go to my polling place because I like the experience. And this last time around, there was just nobody there. So I think a lot of people had the same experience. Thank you for calling in. If you've got an experience like Roger or want to talk about why 20 people out of 900 in this area would bother to vote, what are your thoughts on this? 866-798-8255. Let's go next to Ed in Menlo Park. Hi, Ed.
Yes, good morning. I had an idea here. I noticed that these smartphones are very popular. What if there was software that allowed you to make your voting selections on the smartphone? The information would be running from software at the registrar's office. A filled-in absentee ballot is then mailed to your address. You look it over, and then you put it in the envelope, and you mail it back. Now, as a blind individual, this also gives me accessibility in casting my vote, which I do not have now very well. What about that?
Kim?
Rose, I can answer
that. Sure.
Yeah, there's actually a bill pending, and I'm blanking out on the bill number, but it would allow, I just heard about it yesterday, it would allow election officials to send a ballot via email to certain voters, military voters and voters with disabilities, that they could then fill out on their screen, use whatever screen reader that they're using to verify it, and then print it out and mail it in or fax it in. So there are some explorations of those kinds of technologies. There's also a process going on in LA called the Voting System Assessment Project. And they are developing a new voting system that's going to be publicly owned. So, you know, the issues that Professor Moore was raising about who owns the voting machines, L.A., and also Travis County, Texas, are developing in-house voting systems that will be publicly owned. And those are anticipating using a kind of system where a voter would be able to go onto their computer or smartphone and pre-select their choices and then bring that device in with them or send an email in and be able to have their ballot pre-populated on the screen at the polling place and then be able to verify it and then print it out there on the spot.
Wow.
So people are looking at those technologies. But the thing to remember is all this costs money. And, you know, one of the biggest problems we have right now is the legislature is not paying its fair share of election costs. The legislature and the governor and the state of California owe the counties tens of millions of dollars in unpaid reimbursements for election costs. And they're not paying for the cost of these special elections. I mean, you can point to the low voter turnout and see the money that's not forthcoming from the state. Even though we're back in the black and we have revenues, the legislature and the governor have continued to suspend the funding for the election mandate. So we're working this year with a number of other groups to get this funding restored, because obviously voter turnout and people's voting experiences are going to continue to be lacking as long as we're not willing to fund the costs that are required to provide people with the kind of services and conveniences and information that they expect in this day and age.
And Kim, what can people do to encourage or put pressure on lawmakers to provide this funding for such a crucial issue?
Well, every legislator has a voice in the budget, and so we would encourage people to contact their state legislators and ask them to restore election funding in the state budget. The good news is just 2 weeks ago, we saw this funding get restored in the Senate side of the budget bill on a 3-0 vote. In the subcommittee that took up this issue, they voted to restore $77.4 million to pay for county vote-by-mail programs, pay for provisional ballot signature verification, all these requirements that the state has imposed upon counties. Under the Constitution, they're required to reimburse those costs, and they haven't since 2011. So the Senate put the money back in. Now we've got to try to get the Assembly to do the same thing. Then we've got to focus on the governor. So I would say probably the best bet is to contact the governor, because ultimately it's going to really be his decision whether he is going to be supportive of paying back this particular debt and supporting these costs or not.
Kim Alexander is president and founder of the California Voter Foundation. Dr. Mindy Romero directs the California Civic Engagement Project at UC Davis. And Dr. Jim Moore directs the Tom McCall Center for Policy Innovation at Pacific University in Oregon. Today, we are talking about voter turnout. What would it take to get more people to the polls? If you don't vote, if your voting patterns have changed over the years, what explains it? What are you hearing from friends and family? National turnout in the midterms last year was just 36%, the worst voter turnout in 72 years. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's go next to Robin in Watsonville. Hi, Robin. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So I have some questions about the vote-by-mail security and the actual process that the vote goes through after, you know, I stick it in the mail, and is it always counted, and, you know, is it reported on election night, and that whole process. And then the reason I'm concerned about it is because I had personal experience where I was long-time nonpartisan registered vote by mail, and then I had the experience where 2 years in a row I wasn't allowed to vote when I showed up at the poll with my ballot, because they said, no, you've already cast your ballot. So that I had been registered with my maiden name, so they said, oh, let's get rid of that and use your married name so we'll be able to know that that registration is no longer good. And I came back the next year, the same thing happened again. And then they said, well, we think you should register with a party and maybe your vote will be better protected. So I tried that route, and since then, you know, I haven't had any problems. But anyway, that's my question is about security.
All right, thank you. So what about security with mail-in voting? Mindy, do you want to take that? Or Kim?
Sure, I think we probably can both take it. I'll talk numbers for a moment. It is true that when we cast our ballots here in California using vote by mail, not every ballot gets counted. The vast majority do, and so we certainly don't want to alarm people or discourage people from voting. But in the November 2012 election, about 1% of all mail ballots were rejected for various reasons. And we found in our study at the California Civic Engagement Project of that election, the top three reasons were late, having a bad signature or not having a signature at all. And we understand that many folks that use vote by mail, they put most of their time and attention to figuring out who the heck they're going to vote for, of course, but they may not realize that there's a verification process. They have to get it in on time. And the law's changed a little bit with that, and we can talk about that. But they still have to make sure that they sign their ballot or their ballot envelope and that that signature is going to be verified and it has to match what's on file. And that doesn't happen, particularly for some groups. Youth have a very high rejection rate compared to older groups, and some of that is due to a lack of familiarity with the process, certainly, but also their signatures change. So bottom line, not everyone does get their ballot counted. In the primary election that we had last year, about 2.9% of ballots were rejected. That added up to about 91,000 ballots. And we just crunched the numbers and looked at the Secretary of State's reports for last November, and it looks like about 1.9% of those ballots were vote-by-mail ballots were rejected. So there is a process that has to be verified. There's a huge educational component for voters. And then there's the other side of things. There's how ballots are actually processed in the different county elections offices. So we do have some statewide standards, and we do have some variation, we understand, in terms of particularly around signature verification, how different counties are processing those signatures. And I'll let Kim speak to that. She also conducted a study on that.
One more question. That 91,000 number, I mean, that's a huge number. What happens when a race is really close, under 91,000 votes?
Well, that's a statewide number. But certainly, you know, we have had some very close elections in California. Not too far from where we are, the Omnibera OC race, that was down to the wire for quite some time. And usually the last ballots to get examined and counted are vote-by-mail ballots and provisional ballots. And people are hanging on every ballot. And when those ballots potentially they are being verified and they potentially could be rejected, there could be implications. We had a statewide controller race that was very, very close. And I don't know of anyone that's done the analysis on that particular race in terms of rejection rates, but certainly the margin, the use of vote by mail in that election far exceeded the winning margin, if you will, of votes. So it matters in terms of how ballots are being processed, and to make sure that every vote counts. The bottom line is we want to see every vote count and make sure that no one has their voice not heard.
All right. Well, thank you.
And just to...
Sure. Go ahead, Kim.
Yeah. Well, the caller also was expressing some concerns about what's happened with her ballot when she changed her name. And, you know, I always recommend voters, if you have questions about your ballot status or your registration status, don't just ask the polling place workers. They have a lot on their minds. They're working 16-hour days. There are a lot of rules and procedures that they're trying to follow. And if you have questions about your registration or your ballot, you really need to contact your county registrar of voters and talk with someone on the staff in the office to help you. So I hope that the caller will do that and get her registration straightened out, because there's certainly no reason why her voting rights should be restricted in some way because of her registration status. And regarding her questions about security, we do have concerns about ballot drop-off security. Unlike Oregon, I'd love to hear Professor Moore's comments on this. We don't have statewide standards. We don't even have a provision in statute to allow for ballot drop-off boxes. So a lot of the counties are using ballot drop-off sites, you know, like libraries and city halls, and there's actually nothing in statute that permits them to do that. So we're supporting a bill this year that's authored by Senator Fran Pavley, SB 365, that would provide for ballot drop-off boxes in statute and direct the Secretary of State to create regulations that stipulate what the best practices are for security, chain of custody, and frequency of ballot pickup. So we are working on that. I don't see a lot of fraud in the process, but there are opportunities for mischief. And Mindy was pointing out a particular race in the Sacramento area, and we saw, you know, campaign workers standing over the shoulders of the election workers trying to count those ballots and verify signatures. The signatures have to be verified before the envelopes are opened, separated from the ballot, and the ballot counted. So there were one campaign was challenging a lot of signatures coming from particular neighborhoods, and fortunately, the registrar was able to overcome those challenges. But that does create opportunities for challenges in close races, which is why we think we need to have more uniform statewide standards, which I think Oregon also probably has, and we don't. We don't have robust standards for signature verification, and we also don't have any current law that allows people, if they didn't sign their ballot, to send in their signature after the fact and let their signature be added on through an unsigned ballot statement. We're supporting legislation by Kevin Mullen, AB 477, that would do that. So there are a lot of reforms. I mean, vote by mail is popular, but as one of your early callers, I think Dorothy's pointed out, there's not a lot of streamlining in our system. States like Colorado and Oregon have a lot more streamlining than we do. We have 58 counties that are essentially running 58 different voting programs, and that makes it unnecessarily complicated for voters.
Kim, I mean, we're all shaking our heads over here. Why? Why is this happening in a state like California? I mean, these reforms just seem like no-brainers. It just seems like common sense.
Well, I think these bills are going to pass, and we had a bill passed last year that Mindy was referring to, SB 29, that's going to allow ballots that are received, that are postmarked by Election Day, received within 3 days of Election Day, to still be counted. So we're looking at ways to, and it will increase our voter turnout. If we can reduce our vote-by-mail ballot rejection rate in California, that increases voter turnout. So I think that, you know, there are things like that that we can be doing. But I also wanted to point out something about the bigger picture here, and we all get down into the nitty-gritty on these issues. Ultimately, you know, you have to look at the economic issues that are at play here, Rose, and the fact that the middle class in California is shrinking, homeownership rates are in decline, income inequality is growing. And those are factors that impact whether people decide whether they're going to vote or not, whether people feel like they're stakeholders, whether they feel like they have something to protect. So I think we have to keep in mind that that whole discussion definitely has an impact on voter turnout.
Yeah, it's so true. And also, we really didn't get to talk about all of the voter laws that are passing that are restricting voters across the country. And since you all really dedicate your lives to this issue, I wonder what you think about what we're seeing. So in 2011, Texas passed one of the strictest photo ID laws in the country. A judge struck it down last year, saying it would disenfranchise 600,000 people. The Supreme Court then ruled the law could remain in effect for the November 2014 election. It was a 5-4 vote. It's going back to the courts on April 28th, so be sure to keep your ears open for that. The Brennan Center for Justice has a really great story about all of the people in Texas who were not able to vote because of this. And then I've just been reading about these Republican efforts to prevent people from voting early on Sunday. Nevada is looking at this law right now. If it passes, it would join 14 other states that prohibit early voting on Sunday. This is often dubbed as souls to the polls voter drives. It saw voter turnout en masse on Sundays in past elections in Florida and Ohio. High numbers of people of color voted on Sundays, 56% Black and Hispanic. So, I mean, a lot of people are being very disenfranchised by these laws. Jim, what are you making of this? You come from a state that's working to make sure more people vote, and yet in many parts of the state, these laws are being passed to make sure people don't vote.
Yeah, we just shake our heads here in Oregon, Republican and Democrat both, because the goal here, while there's an argument about whether we should have mass enrollment with the motor voter law kind of idea, you know, everybody's basically saying we want the broadest possible number of people involved, but you've got to show that you want to do it. That's one reason why we have one of the lower registration rates in the country. Our county clerks actually go through and weed the registered voters after every election. If you haven't voted in 3 or 4 elections, then they try to contact you and say, hey, do you still want to be registered? And if you don't respond, they pull you off the rolls. Hmm. But it's pretty amazing. You know, if I could quickly respond to some of the callers and comments here. Security. In Oregon, every single signature is checked. It's statewide, but that's only since 2000. In 2000, Oregon was one of the battleground states that was very close between Al Gore and George Bush. If the national spotlight had been on Oregon's brand-new statewide vote-by-mail system, like it was on Florida during that election, we don't know if it would have survived. And so they put in a whole bunch of things, in effect, getting rid of 36 county systems and saying, here is the single state system because of those very concerns right there. The issue of the smartphones is fascinating. In Oregon, there was a pilot program in 2012, and now 2014, it's spread to every county. If you have a variety of issues, a county employee will come to your house with an iPad.
Wow.
And they'll help you vote. They'll take your vote in. It's totally secure, you know, all that kind of stuff. But once again, the issues of budget come into all of that. But that's what the Oregon experiment is right now.
How are you able to do that, Jim? As we're talking about all these reforms we need in California, how did you do that? How did voters and politicians do that in Oregon?
Well, in Oregon, it turns out that the Secretary of State, and this the one that did that particular reform was Kate Brown, who became our governor about 2 months ago. And Kate Brown looked out there and said, you know, we need to work on getting people who have issues with voting, blindness or whatever it happens to be. And so she made a decision just as herself, as the head of the department, an elected official. And she found the funding and then carved the funding out of the legislature for the next biennium to fund it going statewide. So it didn't have to go to the voters. The legislature here is actually pretty open to these kinds of things, as we saw with the passage of the motor voter bill. And so it turned out not to be a tremendous amount of money. In California, it would be a big amount of money, but proportionally, I'm not sure if it would be much bigger. But that's just what the solution was here.
And Caleb in Santa Cruz is calling. We're almost out of time, so we can't take your call, Caleb. But he says, as a houseless person, his vote is not counted, and he wants to talk about disenfranchised voters. So, Kim, what are we seeing in California in terms of disenfranchised voters? And efforts to try to make it easier to vote.
I mean, if you are homeless, you're still eligible to register and vote. The challenge is that the election officials need to be able to put you into a precinct. And so you need to give a description of where you generally reside. But it doesn't have to be a home or an apartment. It could be a street, a corner or a street address. And then you need a place where they can mail you your voting materials, your sample ballot, and things like that. So we do provide for ways for people who are homeless to still be able to vote. Mindy, did you?
Oh, well, I was going to jump in a moment ago just regarding the restrictions around registration and voting. Just to speak a little more generally, and I think this is just important, I'd like to close on it, if I may. So whenever we talk about restricting registration or access, whether it be nationally or even here in California, we are in the middle of a great amount of momentum when it comes to reforms, and we are opening up the process, and we want to recognize that. But still, there are restrictions and barriers institutionally to voting for folks here. Whenever we talk about restrictions, those restrictions don't just bring down the overall general voter turnout, but they disproportionately impact voters that are historically underrepresented at the polls, so voters of color, young people. And when we talk about reforms and opening up the electorate and removing barriers, we're going to increase turnout, but we're going to increase the representation of our electorate, period. So we have an electorate here in California that does not look like the residents of California. It is much older, whiter, higher income, more educated, and that has huge impacts on things like policy and decision making from the state house to the local level for everyone. And so, when we talk about when we talk about low turnout, we have to remember that we are talking about a small group of a very important group of folks, but a small group of folks that don't represent the whole electorate.
Dr. Mindy Romero directs the California Civic Engagement Project at UC Davis. Kim Alexander is president of the California Voter Foundation. Dr. Jim Moore directs the Tom McCall Center for Policy Innovation at Pacific University in Oregon. Thank you all for joining us.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And for more information on these issues, check out yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Podcast at yourcallradio.org. Knock Nguyen produces the show. Raza, senior producer, and Matt Martin is executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss a new report detailing the origins of the so-called Islamic State. We'll also talk about former New York Times reporter Judith Miller, who claims intelligence agencies are to blame for her discredited reporting on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. We'll be joined by Der Spiegel's Christoph Reuter, McClatchy's Mark Seibel, and veteran journalist James Moore. Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.